Today is Sunday, February 15th, 2015. It's a rainy Sunday afternoon, but it's good that it's raining because at least all the forecasters now feel better. They kept on threatening us with snow, rain, and at least the rain got here. I want to mention that I'm a lot wealthier than when I met with you last week. I had a Baruch Hashem, another great grandson, this past Thursday. So this coming Thursday we have a Brit Be'ezrat Hashem. Problem will be how they're going to work out the Pidyon HaBen, because it falls basically on Shabbos, it's the 31st day. And even with all the chumras of waiting 30 full days, Shabbos takes care of it. So we'll see what they want to do with the Pidyon HaBen. On the other side of life, I just want to mention again, for you it's not real, for me it's very real. When I was struggling in the rabbinate in 61-62, there was a family, the Atlas family, that was very good to me, very kind to me, and gave me support and, you know, made me feel confident that I will survive the struggle. And I want to dedicate this year in their memory. Hilton, my dear friend Hilton, died a year ago, and while I was in Florida, his wife Gloria, our good friend Gloria, died. And maybe some of you know their son, my dear Talmud Yedidger Atlas, Lieutenant Colonel in the Army and in charge of relations with the Golabrins and Sefrei Torah. He raises funds for the tzitzit that you see in the Army today. It's quite a family, two sons living here, all their grandchildren living here, great-grandchildren, Kanayin Hara. Okay. I also want to answer a very famous student of mine, Rabbi Dr. Professor Mark Shapiro, sent me a fax, and I told him I would answer the question in class. I simply can't write it all out, but he asked me an interesting question. I've often mentioned that there are two letters in my life that I didn't answer. Every other letter that I ever received, I answered. One letter was from, unfortunately, a Talmud of mine, who I'm not so proud of. I'll just mention his name. I'm not going to go into details, Rabbi. I'll mention his name. He's well known, but you'll understand why I'm not proud of him. Rabbi Stephen Greenberg, V'dayle Hakima. So I got a letter from London. He set me up with someone with his Torah on the homosexuality. Lady published the book, and he wanted a haskama. And Chas v'Chalil, I would not do that. So you can understand why I didn't answer that letter. The other letter I didn't answer, some of you recognize the name, Mark Shapiro, one of the most brilliant doctorates done in modern times, his doctorate at Harvard, the last doctorate done under Professor Tversky, on the Sri Deish. And he thanks me in the introduction, because down the hall, I can show you the room, I can show you where he sat, some 34, 35 years ago, was the first time you ever heard about the Sri Deish in my class, and he went on to become the world expert. So what happened was, there was a very nasty review of the book in the Yidden, the Satma newspaper, and the editor evidently in that review cited my Rebbe and referred to him as Dr. Soloveitchik. And it seems that the editor got a lot of nasty feedback, even in the Satma greater world, that it's not right to call Mori Rebbe doctor. You have to call him Harav. You want to add the doctorate, okay, but he's basically Harav Soloveitchik, not Dr. Soloveitchik. His brother, my chemistry professor, was Dr. Soloveitchik. So the editor sent me a letter. He wants me to, that he says you're recognized as one of the great experts on Rabbi Soloveitchik, Rabbi, Dr. All the title Soloveitchik. Could you please certify that the Rabbi Soloveitchik had a doctorate, so in other words, no one can call me a liar? So I thought to myself, yeah, it's right. I could write a letter like that, but if I read a letter like that, he's going to beat up on my Talmud, Mark Shapiro, even more. So that's why I refused to write the letter. Maybe I was right, maybe I was wrong. Dear Rabbi, I heard a lecture from about 4 years ago in which you mentioned that some Satmar wrote to you asking if the Rav had a doctorate and this was against me and you put the letter inside my book on Rabbi Weinberg, that's correct. The story, it didn't make sense. What does the Rav doctorate have to do with Sattar attacking me? Sincerely, Mark Shapiro. P.S. I have many friends in Satmar. So that's the story. It's a friend. I don't know if I did the right thing. You can judge me l'chumra, judge me l'kula. Either way, I can't win and can't lose on a question like that. Okay, today's a very interesting shiur. You'll see why in a half hour. But we're finishing up Smeichim L'Shomro. And here's a rabbi in Brooklyn. I don't know who he is. I never met him. I don't know where he studied, but as I've said these last few weeks, I'm very impressed by his knowledge and by his innovative mind. And he found so many reasons why we have to have an Erev to help people. And just one of the reasons he found, it just happened to me this week. I bought a new shirt, and one of the labels describing the material was sewn in two places, and one of these stitches loosened up. So if I don't have an Erev, I'm walking around with something attached to my shirt with only one stitch. It's a shaila already of carrying chotzah, just what he writes about. So it would solve so many problems. Also, what's fascinating is, forgetting about the medicine and the medical alert and the bindle and the bindle from Kever Rachel, with all that being said, it, from a Hasidic point of view, and here you get involved in a world which I can't say it's the world in which I was raised, but those of you who have a Hasidic background, Haskula, for children, and I need not tell you, people who don't have children, we take for granted, you know, it's easy to have children. The whole shaila is, a young couple gets married, can they delay, can they put off having children right away? And this is a question of modern times, of course. Children have to finish college, children need panasa. Well, we take for granted it's easy to have children. It's not so easy to have children. And if anyone who has that problem or has relatives knows what I'm talking about. People go now, we have in Israel, we're probably the head of the world as far as being able to help people right within walking distance of here. Shari Tzedek Hospital, Pua gives lectures occasionally in the Kollel to the Rebbetzins. So we do wonderful work here. But here you have Hasidic stories. Min meg trugin, trugin, and trugin in Yiddish means not just to carry; it means to be pregnant. Excuse me. I know. I'm bringing to Yitzchak. Do you know how to teach? You don't know how to teach. How did the Rav teach? Please.
I use Zuzamala. I repeat.
Yeah, and then at the start, and I'm just bringing you up. What we'll get you in a minute.
Okay.
And the mal on Shabbos and everything, and the point he makes is very good too, that in a backyard you're going to put up your own Erev, and so many times you don't know what you're doing, and this way if Rabbanim Mumchim will put up a community Erev, it'll be done properly. Going to a mikvah on Shabbos and drying out hair, carrying a kamir on Shabbos, and all these problems he goes through. Then we ended off last week's shiur, and here again it's the problem that comes up time and again, and there are many people who will meet me and smack my face and say, how dare you give shiurim in which you imply that there can be another point of view, not only the point of view of Reb Moshe. But I have to be honest, halachically, and there are two points of view, and it's not a question of Reb Moshe, it's a question of the Mishkanot Yaakov versus the Bet Ephraim. And there are certainly two distinctive points of view, and I have every right in the world to present both points of view. I present it as honestly as I can. I have my own feelings, halach l'maisa, for myself, but at least we have to understand both positions. And he comes out against Reb Moshe, that, and I mean, this takes guts to write, that if there's any place in the world where you can build an Erev, it is in Brooklyn. Why in Brooklyn? because of the water surrounding it. Their fences up. No one in a modern civilized country allows water to be there where kids can fall in. You have to have fences. It's a ma'aket ha-selegagecha, plain and simple. All right. And finally, we ended off last week's class with a very important concept. When people start the machloka and they go around collecting signatures and they use tactics coercing you to sign. How can you not sign? They go to Rabbi Rubin. You're a young musmach from Yeshiva University. How can you not sign if Rav Moshe Feinstein is signed on? And here he makes the point that is absolutely correct, that even in the Sanhedrin, you didn't hear the opinions of the Gedolei Yisrael until the younger Talmidei Chachamim gave their opinions, because we don't want you to be influenced. You have to express what you believe, and if you're a Talmid Chacham, your opinion counts. All right, be in the Sanhedrin om dim leminyan. Today we don't have that concept. It's impossible. Something we spoke about years ago already in this class. But the Rambam, the Hakdama LeMishnah Torah, which I trust you all know by heart. So you see already, the Rambam touches upon this problem. But now I want to go further, Yitzchak. At the end of the Sefer, he does something very sharp. Because what happened with the Kanaot, and the Kanaot, how the Kanaot came into Judaism, it could be historically that it can be traced back. Kol Zman, we lived in the ghetto. There was no Kanaot, at least as far as I understand, there was no real Kanaot. You could have a machloket, you could have difference of opinion, but you lived in the ghetto, everyone remained nominally frum. And I don't want to be naive, some of you know I know a little bit about response literature. I can show you, Zev, I can show you tshuva that will blow your humble mind. You follow me? What people did in the ghetto? The worst tshuva ever is the famous tshuva of the Noda Bihuda, where he calls the guy a big Talmud Chacham and he praises him. I mean, Havalai, the Noda Bihuda would say that about me. Believe me, I jump for joy. And you know what he's dealing with? This guy lived in his in-law's house. He had Gessen Kess, to use the Yiddish, supported by his in-laws, and he had an ongoing adulterous relationship with his mother-in-law. And I mean, this is like a Hollywood movie. Could you imagine? It's where have you gone, Joe DiMaggio? What was her name? Mrs. Robinson. What was that movie called? It was The Graduate. Oh boy, a nice Jewish guy there, right? Justin Hoffman. And okay, and I see, Steve, you still haven't forgotten, what was it, the 60s, as I recall. So it's not that Jews didn't sin. Unfortunately, we sin. We're human beings. There's a Yom Kippur. But no one changed the religion in the ghetto. And underline what I'm saying. If you sinned, Yom Kippur came, you asked God to forgive you. You said you stood before the Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm a murderer, forgive me. But you didn't say to murder is permissible. I'm an adulterer, forgive me. You didn't say adultery is permissible. You understand, when we came out of the ghetto, we're under tremendous challenge. And with the finest chinuch in the world, and it eats away at me, because I can understand from my vantage point, I may be your, but from my vantage point, Adam curvates a lot. So I can understand the Haredi world. I have, to my credit, perhaps hundreds, if not thousands, of Haredim that I say for Yiddishkeit. I understand from the Haredi.
You mentioned the ghetto. That was Halbesaurus. In hiding, we spent 2 Yom Kippurs in hiding. Did you know 1 Yom Kippur?
All right, Dad, you're talking the Holocaust. The Holocaust already is...
The ghetto's part of Holocaust.
Yeah, I understand that, but that was a different type of ghetto. I'm talking about the medieval ghetto where Jews lived for hundreds of years, and they were forced into there. There was no side and no outside influence. I can understand the Haredi, their kids whose minds had turned off. Kids who wanted to, let's say a kid wants to be a musician. How can he grow up in Bnei Brak and become a musician? And some of these kids run away. A kid wants to be, from the time of youth, he's interested in being an astronomer. He's interested in being a scientist, interested in being a medical doctor. He's interested in Chochmat Yisrael, Wissenschaft des Judentums. So I can understand kids rebel, and there's a tremendous tragedy that if they rebel, generally speaking, they throw it all away. But in my world, with the finest chinuch, with the finest homes, with the finest rebbeim, with students of mine trying to teach and instill with them the romance of being a Jew, you see kids throw off their kippah. We just had examples in public with someone, Lo Aleinu, was killed from a certain yeshiv and his whatever. No kippah. How does it happen? So there's a tremendous challenge. And I would imagine that each one thinks, I have the perfect answer. And if you don't accept what I'm saying, you're going to go off the path, you're going to be an apikaris, etc., etc. And halachically too, these machlakot became Yoharig v'Alya Avar. And here you see in Brooklyn, they started to rip down the Erev. Now, Sam, in London, did they rip the Erev down? Was it that bad or just no? At least they didn't actually rip it down. In Brooklyn, people ripped the Erev down. Well, beginning on page 104, Rabbi Miller, right? Rabbi Moshe Mendel, beginning on page 104, gives endless reasons why these people are sinners. Number one, it's not your property. I have no right to go over and take your plate and break it. Number two, the Erev serves a positive purpose. By your destroying it, it's bal tashchit. It's like taking good food and throwing it out. I know one Gadol Yisrael, I'm going to mention his name, someone I know intimately. So I don't know if he was right or wrong, but when his kids, little kids, took, let's say there was coleslaw on the table, and each kid had to take a portion. You follow me, Rafi? And this kid took a little too much. He was forced to finish it. He was taught bal tashchit. I don't know, I couldn't do that. As far as being a parent, I could never do something like that. But all right, the kids turned out good. And then not only that, you destroy someone else's Erev. So you want to do tshuva. You have to pay back. Who do you pay to? Who put up the money? Not only that, you have to... Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, Yom Kippur doesn't grant Slicha Mechila until you go and ask that person for forgiveness, right or wrong. I told you, I had this Shaila Halacha L'Maisa with the chicken man from Muncie, and he comes into my shul, and we have many minyanim in Ohel Rivka, and they give him an aliyah, and people knew who he was. It was not at my minyan. I don't know him. I would have not known him. And people got hysterical. Hey, they give this man a minyan. He was machil treifat nevela to. I told you, I ate in one of the places that bought from him when my Talmud Avery Joe got married, the president's son. So at least I had a miracle. They served till they got to the main course. It was after 10 o'clock. I was in America at the time. I was in Muncie. And after 10 o'clock, after 9 o'clock, 8 o'clock, I don't like to eat meat, so I ordered fish. So maybe the Eibishter saved me. I had fish. So the worst could have been the plates. I knew it's an Einu Ben Yomo. I'm safe. B'diavad. I don't want to get involved with Rabbi Bednash, but B'diavad, I'm safe. But Nevelet and Treifat. So the Gabbai came to me. He went and told the Gabbai. He did tshuva. He has a letter from Rabbi Wolpe. I told the Gabbai, forget about what he's telling you. First ask him if he paid everyone back for the dishwashers that had to be destroyed, for the dishes that you can't kasha that had to be thrown out. People threw out their ovens because the idea of having an oven that you made Nevelet and Treifet in was egelhaftik to them. Egelhaftik, disgusting. It repugnant to them. When he shows you he paid, then we'll talk about the Ribbono Shel Olam. So the end story was that they told him, you can come and daven, we can't throw you out, But you can never have a kibbutz in the shul until the rabbanim here from America, in other words, they stressed it's not the Israeli rabbanim, the rabbanim who don't know America, no American mentality, until they say you can have an aliyah. Well, he married and moved away and still in Yerushalayim, but doesn't have an our shul. And then he says, spiritually, how do you rip down an Erev? In order to rip down an Erev, I love what it says here, you're losing your temper. Now, what did Chazal say about someone who loses his temper? Oved avoda zara. And believe me, I've seen people in my life lose their temper. Courage. Do I have to go further? Courage. And we all get caught up in it. My wife always says to me, relax. Don't make an idiot out of yourself. You know, you want to say something, a driver cut you off. I mean, people drive. Hashem Yerachem, what you see on the streets, normal people, and they're driving as if they're at war, driving a tank in enemy territory. And how can you be Oved Aved Zara? And he goes on and on, quoting all the sins that these people did. And if a kid will say, well, my Rebbe sent me, so you'll say, well, the Rebbe's not guilty. Nu quote the Gemara, Divrei HaRav, Divrei HaTalmud, Divrei Mishomim, the Gemara in Kedushin, that's Menbet, but Divrei HaRav, Divrei HaTalmud, Divrei Mishomim, but he, you know, the Rebbe will say, he shouldn't have listened to me, he should have listened to the Shulchan Aruch, not to me. But here, the Rebbe can't say that, because the Talmud is doing what the Rebbe tells him. The Rebbe, the Talmud has no opinion. It's not different. Divrei HaRav is telling him, you follow me? Be very Divrei HaRav is telling him, go and rip down the Erev. So this volume, basically you can divide it into three major areas. The greatest part of the volume, 120 plus reasons why an Erev will accomplish so much in Brooklyn. The second part of the volume, what halachically gives him the right to take issue with Reb Moshe. The third part of the volume, that you're a mazik ripping it down. How can you do something like that? You're an Oved Aved Zara. You owe money to the people, you're Monea Tov, 101 little reasons why someone ripping it down is sinful. Now, I need not tell you, this plague, this illness, call it what you wish, what has come on the modern scene, you see, if you send Talmidim to rip down an Erev, then there's no longer any question that you're going to have Panovich and have knives pulled in the Beit HaMedrash. That you can throw Leben at a Gadol B'Yisrael, Reb Geshen Edelstein, one of the most learned Rashi Yeshiva in Panovich. The middle of davening, they threw Gil Leben at him. But the middle of davening, Marav, I mean, you see, if you teach Tanot, And you permit this type of behavior, it transfers. One cannot just rip down a rhythm and not have it affect his very gestalt, his very personality, his very outlook, his very deportment. And this is a tragedy that's come into our world. I don't know where it comes from. Satmar began in America with Reb Moshe, with the AID, with when Reb Moshe was Matir, with the midnight phone calls, and then Satmar and Bells went fighting in Yerushalayim, and they, you know, who made a lot of money off them and still makes in recent times too. Playboy magazine. This was the shtick, to order Playboy and have it delivered to the home of a Gadol B'Yisrael. I mean, when you think about it, it's just repugnant to the second power. But this is how he critiques the people ripping down the Erevim. Let me go one final step. This is a lady named Mrs. Etty Steinmetz. Her father-in-law was Rabbi Saul Steinmetz. Make believe you've heard the name, so the ignorant pass for the wise. Zichrono Livracha. Adam, he survived and got to America when he was about 16, 17. A Hungarian, sound familiar? Got Smika from the yeshiva. I taught Etty's brother-in-law right here, and not in this building, was in the early years of BMT. Do you know what became of Saul Steinmetz? A kid who came to America, a teenager, the greatest expert in the world on the English language. You will see in Rupster's Unabridged, you'll see in any book dealing with English language, has to consult and thank Dr. Saul Steinmetz. He was second to none. And he was kind enough. He went through a few chapters of my manuscript on Bernard Rebel and helped me, you know, with proper English and proper sentence structure. I had the great skut to have his help and to have the help of Chaim Potok, Zichrono Livracha. And this lady, a very bright lady, listens to the shirim for years. Dear Rebbe, after listening to your shirim of late when you mentioned Rabbi Mandel in his Sefer, I was wondering if he had heard of you singing his praises. After you mentioned his street address, I realized that I know of him. I contacted his Rebbetzin, whose number I had from years ago. She runs a nursery program that one of my children once attended. Although she had not heard of you or your shirim, she was most interested in hearing how much you appreciated her husband's lamdanut and well-thought-out ideas. The Rebbetzin mentioned what a struggle it is, as so many people do not agree and do not hold by the Erev from Brooklyn. Although there was much written about the young mothers in the Sefer, the Rebbetzin specifically mentioned all the elderly people living nearby who do not go to shul on Shabbat due to the Erev issue. She even mentioned the tension between family members regarding this too. And this is, you know, part of the jokes they tell, but it's not exactly a joke. In Borough Park, when you talk to Shidduch, so they want to know, does the girl's family, do they use a plastic tablecloth on Shabbos? You see, if you use a plastic tablecloth on top of the white tablecloth, that's a sign you're not mechabed Shabbos properly. You don't know that? What? Yeah, no, everyone understands. The disposable plastic. By the way, just in parentheses, all of you know that I made famous, everyone thanks me, the Rub's viewpoint was exactly the opposite. That's the story that the Talna Rebbetzin, Zichrono Livracha, the Boston Rebbetzin, excuse me, you know why I said Talna, but the Boston Rebbetzin, thank you, Yitzchak, the Boston Rebbetzin tells in her memoir. They were great people. You have no idea who the Boston Rebbe and his wife were, and the chesed and the help that they extended to Jews. Not to say that it's a small episode, but a very important episode. But anyway, the Rebbetzin, I told you that there was the, again, I'll repeat it if you don't recall. There was a family that became from, you know, going to one of the big universities in Boston, maybe Harvard. Husband and wife became from, and the Boston Rebbe who made them from was makariv them. And one Shabbos, the Rav invited them for lunch. And they come to the Rav, and the Rebbetzin was well yet, and everything, and that evening they come back to Boston for Sudashli Shit, and the Rebbetzin asked them all about what was it like being at the Rav, what was Shabbos, and these young people give a total description. In the description, the fact that the Rebbetzin used, that the Rav's Rebbetzin, Tanya, used paper disposable complaints. So after Shabbos Sunday morning, Boston Rebbetzin calls the Rav's wife, and she says, "What's this about? You use paper plates?" And she says, "Yes, because after Shabbos, I don't have time to clean up, and I want to go hear my husband shear the famous Saturday night shayur. So I use fancy paper plates." And the Boston Rebbetzin writes that this story saved my life. We then used to buy tremendous cases of paper goods, and that's what we served and saved my life. Could you imagine? You had 40 people for supper, and all you have to do is bring over a big garbage pail and throw it in. All right. So coming back now to Borough Park, shidduchim have been broken off because you're not samach on the heter. You follow? Other people are samach. You're not samach on the eruv. What? Your kalei dat shidduch broken off. Cousins don't speak to each other. Brothers fight with each other. You understand? This is amratzah. The average Talmid Chacham today doesn't know what you're talking about with him. Doesn't know what the Chazon Ish's viewpoint is. That doesn't know what Rav Asher Weiss's viewpoint is. And the average person doesn't understand the sugyas and what's involved, and the Lamdanut and Digle HaMidbar and Moshe Rabbeinu and all that we've done these last 2 years. The average person doesn't know this. And the Kanaut rules. And this Kanaut, could you imagine? You're ripping down an Erev. Oh, it hurts. All right, I understand today already in Brooklyn they've made their peace with it. No one rips down the Erev. But nevertheless, this chasm, this dichotomy is very, very real. And if Snow would be here, he would tell you that his family, which is Lakewood-oriented, at least part of the family, and mamish related to some of the top people in the Lakewood hierarchy, Vic Snow would tell you that he has relatives who consider you a shegetz and eislaf if you are samech on the Erev. Not unlike what goes on in London with the monk shul, as they call it, where you cannot be a member, at least when I visited London, 3-4 years ago, I saw with my own eyes the sign that you cannot be a member if you are samech on the Erev. All right. Now let us go one step further and come to something which is min daf machan ha-shechiyanu. It's probably the first time these concepts and this language has entered the halachic literature. All right, we're back to one of the great individuals of our time, Rav Asher Weiss. Rav Asher Weiss, those of you who know him need no introduction to him. He's an American-born Kloisenberg Hasid. His father was a survivor. I don't know whether his father was always a Kloisenberg Hasid, but the Kloisenberg Rebbe's behavior in the death camps won many, many devotees. In the apartment where I lived with my dear wife when we first got married, 1960-61, while I was my final year at yeshiva, finishing up smicha, so we lived on Grand Avenue in the Bronx. And in the building were quite a few Shomrei Shabbat. The owner of the building was Shomrei Shabbat people. And they rented out preferably to Shomrei Shabbat. And among our neighbors, there was one family, Mamish Litvakind, who were Kloisenberg Hasidim. And I asked, how do you become a Kloisenberg Hasid? Is Ida Litvak, Mitala Ditvishi Yichis, and learned in Litvishi Yeshivas? And he said to me, if you would have seen the deportment of the Kloisenberg Rebbe in the concentration camps where I was, you too would become a Kloisenberg Hasid. So Rav Asher Weiss was raised in this environment, came in Aliyah quite young. I believe he was a teenager. And this is an individual, Kol Razlo Anislay, Bucky and Shas and Paiskim, Rishonim, Akronim. They're individuals blessed with minds. I often say, I've learned a lot of Torah in my life, but I remember very little. If I would remember everything I learned, you would all stand up for me jumping from the ceiling when I walked in. But then you feel, but I'm comforted, Sam, I'm comforted, I'll tell you a vat from the Rav, that you will be happy you came to Shia today. The Rav used to say, when learned as we let me say it in English, when I relive it, I break into Yiddish, what can I do? Because I heard it in Yiddish. Do you know Yiddish? No, okay, so let me say it in Yiddish, I'll translate. What's the good of it? We forget. We learn so much Torah. But the Rev said, no, Torah, learning Torah is like going to a mikveh. You come out of the mikveh, you dry yourself off. But the kedusha, the Torah, remains. Learning Torah, you forget, it's true. Akefet forgets. Herbie Maltz forgets, Michael Miller forgets. None of us have minds like Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein or Rabbi Asher Weiss, but we're not the same person anymore. The sanctity and the purity that the Torah instilled within us remains, just like Shmuel comes out of the mikvah. He may use a towel, but the Kedusha V'Tahara is there. Okay? So that's a vort from the Rav. Beautiful vort. Okay, now, so you see, Rabbi Asher Weiss has dealt with the question of Erev many times over. Evidently, like everyone else, they're putting the needles into him, putting the pins into him, giving him hell. Who are you to be matir in the Erev? Rabbi Moshe Rasid, Rabbi Moshe is the Gadol Hadar. Rabbi Aaron Cutler, it seems, acid. It seems. Again, there we can't be positive. But my opinion is he did, Asa, even though Rabbi Menachem Kasher claims he told him he hasn't reached the definitive answer, he's working on it. So, first of all, I'm quoting, let me tell you what I'm quoting from, of course, I don't know whether this has been published beyond. I'm quoting from Pashat B'Shalach, the year is Tash Ayin Aleph. Tash'a B'Shalach would be, let's just think, it would probably be 2011, because Tash'a Ayin Aleph would be 2010, 2011, so this would probably be 2011. And I'm quoting from his Divrei Torah, the Shir he gave that week, which is published and available, given out, etc., etc. So, first of all, he goes through all the shita and everything that we said. And he says, look, it's a basic machloket between the Bet Ephraim and between the Mishkanot Yaakov. He gives you all the sources of your chayshish v'tetzai and amma, you're not chayshish, what do you consider 600,000? But he comes out very clearly, Rav Asher Weiss, that what the Bet Ephraim says in relation to 600,000, you cannot count the people in the cars. And the people in the cars, we have to understand, are in a Rishut HaYachid. And I told you, logically speaking, it's really a Rishut HaYachid. All right, you can say it's moving, fine, that'll take you into different shaylos and Tumah V'Tahara. But it doesn't add into the 600,000. Not only that, when you add up all the achronim and everyone who discusses the issue, the majority come down lahakel. And I showed you that more than a year ago, that in the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata, and I gave you the exact source, and I showed you the second edition and the third edition, he adds up even more Mekilim than the Be'ir Halacha, than the Chafetz Chaim. Chafetz Chaim too, again, we did this 2 years ago already. Chafetz Chaim, Adam, makes a cheshbon, starts counting up, you follow? And he more or less is even. The Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata has many, many more that are Mekel. And you know, you can go with the Shulchan Aruch, what's his real psak? He says Sheish Omrim, but it's clear from the Ramah that the Ramah was Notkev Lahakel. And when you go through all the sources, it may very well be that once you have a Reshut HaRabim, the Oraita, and you put up a Tzuret HaPetach, it may very well be that that is sufficient on the Oraita level, although the Rabbanan, they required the doors, the fences being put up. But once it's no longer on a Deoraita level, if you can add more Sveikot and more Shitot, you can be Mekel. So he reaches the conclusion, and it's the inevitable conclusion, and the only conclusion to reach, Me'ika Hadin, we can build an Erev today of Surah Kapetach. We have no Rishut HaRabim Deoraita. If you don't want to be Samech on the Bet Ephraim and all those who agree with him, so you personally can be Machmir. But I have every right in the world to explain the Shita HaMekila, we'll call it that. And this is Reb Asher Weiss. Now, here he gets involved with Ramot. Ramat is a big, sprawling area. There's a main highway, Golda Meir, then there are other main highways beyond Golda Meir. You have side roads. They're all more than Tet Zion Amot wide. Around Ramat, there's the area of the city. The Erev of the city, if you travel to, I have a daughter living in Pisgat Zev Mizrach. Whenever I would travel there with my little grandchildren, today already they're giving me great-grandchildren, so they're bigger than I am today, but they're bigger than I am in many ways over. I have one grandchild six foot six. I have a few grandchildren 6'3". They're bigger than me in many ways. So, but when they were little, I would always point out to them the Erev around the highway we're traveling, the Erev around Pisgat Zev Mizrach, which connects with Pisgat Zev, which connects with Ramat, which connects with Yerushalayim, per se. But my dear students, all of you know that we have endless machloket in this city. All of you know where Rebbetzin Shoshana Shechta, where they're going home tomorrow. When the Shechtas are here, I feel very empowered because I have someone I can talk with and cry with, and we go back to childhood together. I have confidence in Reb Heschel. Shoshana, powerhouse. So Shoshana told me on Monday, or was it Tuesday, that after she came to Shir Monday, and then afterwards I think she went into the heart of Yerushalayim with her daughter, and they ran into a pogrom. They were frightened stiff. As you know, tremendous demonstrations in the Meir Shearim area about the four boys arrested for not reporting to the draft board as they were required. And without getting into contemporary politics, all of you know that this is the big machloket between Yerushalayim and Bnei Brak, between, what do they call them, the Mechablim, and what's the other name? They have two different groups going. The Mechablim is one group, and the Sonim is the other group. Yerushalayim are the Mechablim, the Sonim are from Bnei Brak. Steve, can you imagine this is going on in our world? But all right, I have a smile on because Baruch Hashem, I'm not part of it. I'm not a Mechabel, I'm not a Sonei, I'm in a different world. But I can understand, I can explain the Machlekes. I'm broad-minded, I understand what's going on there. But they got caught up. So when you have already the Mechablim Sainim, the Eidei Charedit, the Rabaralas, their people, they're not Samach on the Erev of the city. So in many areas like Bayit Vagan, I would imagine Givat Mordechai, I told you this campus I think has three different Erevs around it, including a private Erev. they put up their own Eruv, and now they're putting up an Eruv in Ramot, and they're getting involved with Rabbi Usher Weiss, who lives in Ramat. If I'm not mistaken, I believe his yeshiva is in Ramat. I believe he lives in Ramat. His shul is in Ramat. And they're getting involved with him. By the way, for your edification, Rav Menashe Klein's son also lives in Ramat and has a shul in Ramat. That's the shul that Eli Wiesel dedicated with the money he got in memory of his parents. I've been in the shul. When he got the Nobel Prize, he dedicated it in memory of his parents, gave it to his childhood friend, Rav Menashe Klein. So they're putting up an Erev around Ramat, and they need Rav Asher Weiss, and he's Machshe the Erev, and he's coming under attack, the Mishkanot Yaakov, the seats, not only the main highway, Golda Meir, but Rechov Tzundak, Rechov Rekanti, all of these streets are more than Tet Zion Amot, and you have to be Machmir Shita Tarambam. How can we put up an Erev here? It's a Reshuta Rabin. And he then goes in what the highway is all about. And again, we've said it before, but he says it here so clearly. All these highways are not Reshuta Rabin, the Oraita, because they are not Mufulash. It's not a highway where you can go from one end to the other without having to stop. There are traffic lights. Now, not only are there traffic lights, so you'll say people are walking on the streets. People can't cross. People have to wait for the traffic light. He says, what was Diglei HaMidbar? And he gives a beautiful description, a wide open space where everyone could walk freely. Herbie, you walk there, no one could stop you. No lights, no traffic, no crosswalks. Here in Israel, and he alludes to it, even on a crosswalk, lo aleinu, people get killed, lo aleinu. And you have someone sitting here who was on a crosswalk, what was it, 3 weeks ago?
No, 10 days ago,
and he was blown away by a car on the crosswalk. Right or wrong? Thank God he's sitting here. But they have to do what? They did x-rays, right? They have to check. They can't take chances. Brain concussion, they have to check. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. Very simply put, it is not Diglei HaMidbar. And he says, therefore, it is not a Reshut HaRabim. You don't have to worry. You can't walk freely. Even if there'd be 600,000 people, it's not Bokimbar that they break down the status. This is a Carmelit. It's not a Reshut HaRabim. And then we have, for the first time that I know of in response to literature of this nature, not specifically Dinei Tzva Haganah Yisrael. Tzva Haganah Yisrael has part of the rabbinate, has a kolel, I shouldn't call it a kolel, has officers who are very big lagdanim, who sit and learn day and night to answer the questions and to publish halachic guidance. I cannot tell you how much has already been published out of problems we never dreamt about until modern times. And the more religious soldiers in the army, the more questions, the more that has to be answered. So here we have regular response literature. Throws in a word that I don't even know if Americans are going to understand. V'yodesh lahir b'zeh, v'hinei b'yitziya min ha'ir derech kvish ramat, yesh machson tzva'i, shekol olver bo'otzer lebedika, shechayalei ha'machson. You have the checkpoint. Have you left the city through Ramat? No one goes free. You have to stop. They have to check you. By the way, something you learn in the army and all these roadblocks, ultimately, it's a judgment call. In other words, when I go through, they don't stop me, they don't check the car, they look at me and they make the decision, I'm not a machabel.
I think there's a scanner that reads the license.
I hope you're right. That could very well be. I mean, on the spot, they get an answer. Halavai, you're right. Because I often, because the machablim already, a book just came out about my dear student and her husband, Hashem Yikam Damo, Ellie and Debbie Horowitz. They were, Debbie Wolf, Lo Aleinu, they were killed Leil Shabbat in Kiryat Arba. It's Rabbi Moshe Horowitz, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, it's his son and daughter-in-law. The daughter-in-law was like a student of him from Washington. Was a student, was a member of the house. So they were killed. How were they killed? The machablim came dressed as yeshiva boys, kippah through guts, it's sticking out, and they blew them away at the Shabbos
That's
table.
That's how they killed the three teenagers.
Right. So you know, when you leave it to a quick judgment, I hope Michael is right. I know that when I park on Rehov Balfour, because I live in that neighborhood, so I have the right to park there. So if I'm parking close to the Prime Minister's house, immediately they come from the checkpoint, the gate, and they check the car, and they call in my license plate, and they get an answer a second later. No, this license is okay, not wanted by the police or the army or intelligence. So he says the blockade forces it to be considered a reshut hayachid, or let me not use the word reshut hayachid, a karmelit. It stops you from moving through. Leaving out everything else, that the highway is curved, that the highway is not totally open, that the highway has stop signs, that the highway has traffic lights. You have the blockade area.
There's no machzor in Ramah.
What?
There's no machzor in Ramah.
Beyond Ramah. Yeah, 443.
443.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about.
That's Kibbutz Zever.
No, so, Derech Kvish Ramot, Yesh Machzor Tzvayi, when you go out of Ramot and you're coming into 443, you're going through the machzor. That road picks up Ramot. Ramot curves into it. Anyway, beside that, that's what he has to be referring to.
That's on the other side of Kever Shmuel.
Yeah, well, further, yeah, you're right, further up. But Ramat doesn't lead all the way out. In other words, when you're
it ends,
that's what I'm saying. People going out, that's what he's referring to. He has to be referring to the Machzor in 443. But it's fascinating, and he says the Machzor may even have a din of Mechitzot. Why? Because it's omeid merubal haparutz. When you look at the machzor in the middle of the road, there's more building standing than that which is open, and it's the roof on top. It's very interesting. The roof attaches all the boots. So he says that may very well have a din of a machitza. And then he says, at the other end, where do these roads go into? The roads go into Yerushalayim. And he says, this road, that Golda Meir, ends off in Sanhedria. Sanhedria, the Chazon Ish's viewpoint. Buildings are all over the place. You certainly don't have a Rishit HaRabim D'Oraita. Omeid Merubala Parutz. And if you take Reb Meisha Shita, that whatever the road leads into, if it leads into a Rishut HaRabim, that whole road is Rishut HaRabim. Here it leads into a Karmelit. So the whole road has to have a status of a Karmelit. And it's very fascinating. And he goes on and on and on, showing there are so many reasons. Ha'olemi kol zeh. The milvad she taught apostim the lohavi reshut harabim the oraita ele be 600,000 of rimba b'chol yom yesh tzadim rab rabim nosafim lahakel bezeh. And therefore he says, la nivitati yesh lahakel b'tzirat ha-petach. That this new Erev, you can include all the highways and all the roads, and you only have to use the tzirat ha-petach when there is an opening or a big opening. V'yesh b'zeh zikui harabim v'hatzalat harabim mekshash mekshol. And he says there is salvation involved. The people can carry, people can visit on Shabbos, people can go back and forth. He discusses all this from Ramat Bet to Gimel to Dalet. They don't have to worry. And if someone forgets something in his pocket, Zikui Harabim, and Rabbi Shawais comes down among the Mekilim. La Halacha Ula Ma'as.
When did you write this?
Well, I'm quoting from 2011. So it's not exactly ancient history. It's very contemporary. And that's when evidently a new... Because Ramat has been being opened and opened. Ramat Aleph, Ramat Bet. I mean, it gives Obama a heartache at what's happened in Ramat, what's happened in Gilo. But Gilo doesn't have any major highways like Ramat. Ramat Mamish has major highways. And he tells you that. Even with the highway, what do you measure? Do you measure the Tetzayinam at the highway? What about the Midrachot? What about the areas where people can walk? Does that count? This is all in Achronim. The whole business of cars, Rishut Tayachin, is also noted to consider the cars Rishut Tayachin. You can't count them into the 600,000. And it's a very, very fascinating tshuva. Machsomei Tzva Haganah LiYisrael. Ashreinu shezachinu le musag kazeh, that we have a concept like this. Gentlemen, those of you that are not yet citizens of the State of Israel, let me remind you again, you only come through this valley once, unless you're a Mekubal and believe in Gilgul Neshama, but even with Gilgul Neshama, you only come through with that Gilgul once. You follow me, Sam? I hope you make the right decision. You heard what went on today? Boy, an idiot is born every moment. The Prime Minister spoke this morning at the cabinet meeting that the Jews in Europe deserve full protection, but he implied if they have any seichel, or as Rav Teflit would say, if they have any connection to the romance of the Jewish people and our history, our existence, our Torah, our God, etc., come and aliyah, this is your home. And the chief rabbi of Denmark just came out this afternoon against the prime minister, Rabbi Melchior, from the Melchior family, that the fact that they're killing Jews in Denmark is no reason to go and aliyah. I couldn't believe my ears. No reason to go and aliyah. Oh my gosh. We got to tell all the Frenchies, stay home and enjoy yourself in Paris. Sam, how people remain under the Queen's dominance is beyond my comprehension. But that's what Rakefet believes. The roots of Bnei Akiva and Kol Dodi Dofek, when all is said and done, you can criticize the Rav from today to tomorrow that he didn't come in Aliyah, but his Kol Dodi Dofek, it is a masterpiece, a post-Holocaust Zionist religious Torah masterpiece. Wow. Okay. Let me go one step further. One of the great communities that was established and its history is fascinating, is the community of Australia. Some of you have visited Australia and you know what's going on. Melbourne is the heart of Yiddishkeit in Australia. In addition to Melbourne, Sydney, there are problems there today with, I'm not talking about the problems with the Arabs, that too was a tremendous tragedy, that this was a country where there was no anti-Semitism to speak of whatsoever. The greatest hero of World War I was General Monash, a proud Jew. The university is named the Monash University. My granddaughter-in-law is there right now in an exchange program, a doctoral program. The head of the department at Hebrew U, she's working her doctorate under him, from Jew. The head of the department in Monash University is a from Jew, and they exchange students they have a program. And my granddaughter-in-law tells me it looks good on your CV when you can say you had a fellowship at Monash University in Melbourne. Anyway, be it as it may, today Australia is not what it used to be because of the Arabs. Who could ever believe that a member of the Israeli consul walking home from shul Friday night a few months ago, there was a big attack in the heart of Sydney and he was injured. Others were injured. Lucky no one was killed at that point. It's beyond comprehension what has happened to Australia, what has happened to the world. Beyond comprehension. Now, the story of Melbourne, the Australia began with criminals. Anyone here from Australian descent, the old-timer Aussies, say we can't boast that we came over on the Mayflower, because they say, in America, you boast, I came over on the Mayflower. Kepa says, my wife's family is here since 1870. My family only arrived in 1900. But Australia, the criminals that England didn't want, they sent off to Australia. In other words, if you were sentenced to 20 years in jail, but you're willing to go to Australia, they said, fine, go to Australia and build the country, and if you come back, you go back to jail. So the original Australians, among them were Jews, by the way. Many of these people were from debtors. I don't know if there were murders among them, but, white-collar crime, as they say. So Australia was built, and it was the typical Jewish story of assimilation. Although in England, in anyone under the sun doesn't set on the British Empire, which was once a truism, England by nature is more conservative with a small C. And the greatest proof is that you have a queen today. Could you imagine in the United States, could you imagine for 1 minute in the United States, you would have a king? I mean, it just doesn't go with American thinking, with democracy, France. You would be left out. But England, more than any other country, Belgium has, Holland has, but England, mamish, the monarchy is an institution. Now, when you have a monarchy, it's a conservative, there's a certain conservative overtone. It goes against everything the French Revolution and the American Revolution taught us. And that affected the whole status of religion. And all of you know that in two World War II, in all these countries, be it England, be it South Africa, be it Australia, in all these countries, the synagogue was essentially a traditional synagogue. People, the overwhelming majority, Mechallelei Shabbos. As a matter of fact, the lifestyle in Australia and South Africa is strikingly different than the United States and Canada, or Israel for that matter. Meaning, because the majority of the Balabatim of Mechallelei Shabbos, the big service would be Friday night, and generally it would be late. So you would have an Orthodox synagogue with a major service Friday night after work and during the winter months, whenever there's winter in Australia, South Africa, which is different than, of course, our world and the English world, the service, intentionally, they would stall off. I saw this with my own eyes. They would daven mincha at the right time. Then the rabbi would preach. Then the rabbi would teach a class. And an hour later, Kabbalat Shabbat. And then before Maariv, the shul has a good crowd. The rabbi preaches a sermon. And it's a result of the fact that the average Jew was not from, was not Shomer Shabbos. He worked on Shabbos. But there was a more traditional feeling than America. And even though he might have had a late Friday night service, even though it wasn't called that, it was not like in a conservative or reformed temple in America, where in America I saw with my own eyes that Friday night in November when I came to Maplewood, South Orange, and I went and sat in the reformed temple in back to see what's their power, what's their strength. No one knew me from a hole in the ground. I already was Makabel Shabbos, I already ate, I already benched. I wanted to see what is their power, what is their strength. And Friday night, 3 hours, 2.5 hours after Shabbat began, they're lighting Shabbos candles, the mother of the week. I saw it again here in Israel. Lo aleinu, lo aleinu. When the OU asked me to be the Orthodox rabbi, when was the Jewish parliament, whatever they call it, every 2 years, I think it's held. And they had in every hotel a different rabbi, and they had this very hotel had a reform rabbi, or a Tver rabbi. So I was put in a hotel, in a big hotel in Givat HaTzafatit, in that area. What's it called? A big hotel. Rabbi Avadya used to eat there. It was under his people's hashgacha. The Hayat, unless they sold it and changed the name. So, lo aleinu, I saw with my own eyes a few hundred people, and these are people who are Zionists, who are active, who are part of the Jewish assembly, have a service, their rabbi, and they're lighting Sabbath candles 2.5 hours after Shabbat began. It was, till today I suffer, my eyes, I suffer. And then I spoke later, I had a little group, came to hear an Orthodox rabbi, and there was some Balei Tshuva from Atlanta there. And I asked them, how do you react to that? They said, oh, they don't know, we have to be makar of them. Their whole approach was so different than mine, and I was appreciated what they said, but oh, wow. Then, what happened in Australia is very interesting. In the 1920s, a few families came from Eastern Europe, running away, they couldn't go to America. There was the Cold War ready, they came to Australia. You should recognize one of the names because one of their descendants is a well-known Israeli politician, Feiglin. You've heard the name Feiglin?
Yes.
The Feiglin family was the key Chabad family. There were others, and they brought Yiddishkeit to Australia. We'll see in our Monday class that Yiddishkeit in Australia, to a large degree, nowhere else in the world is it such a high percentage, ultimately is Chabad. And after World War II, Yiddishkeit blossomed. And I'll tell you one story, it shouldn't be forgotten, B'didi Haviyuv D'dov, it happened to me. Not telling you a story out of Shakespeare, but out of Rakefet's life. About 15 years ago, I'm invited by the Australian community to be their guest in Mizrahi for 1 month. And right away they say, well, what are your fees? What do you charge? I say, look, cover my expenses, obviously, and instead of paying me, arrange touring. We're not going to be in Australia so quickly again. Going to be there months. I said, fine. Melbourne, 2 weeks of lectures because there's a lot to do. Sydney, there's less. And they gave me a choice. You'll take 1 week in Sydney and we'll arrange from Sunday through Wednesday. You'll do touring. So we chose to go to Cairns. Cairns is the end of the world. It faces Japan. It's the big kickoff base for the Australian Navy in World War II. And in Cairns, you go out, you see one of the great wonders of the world, the Great Barrier Reef. You do it once in your lifetime. All right, we come to this hotel, beautiful hotel. Goyim Gemurim, everyone looks goyish. Thank God, a block from the hotel was a big supermarket. Products kosher from Melbourne, products with an OU. Haagen-Dazs ice cream from France. We didn't lack for food. Pita from Melbourne, I couldn't believe what. In a big supermarket. You don't see a Jew on the street there, but a big supermarket. I see the owner of the hotel big guy, must be a multimillionaire, and I see his kids, Junior, you know, Yanka, the owner of the hotel, Melvin, whatever his name was, Senior, Melvin Junior. I see the Shiksas running after his sons, and suddenly I get a note delivered that they knock on my door in the hotel. Malka answers the door. Tremendous. I still have it until today. I just put bananas on it. A big, what do you call it, a wooden tray weaved together with a beautiful note. Dear Rabbi and Mrs. Rakefet, it is my great honor to have, I was told that I have one of the, don't want to use the words, forget that part of the letter. I would have the greatest of honor to meet with you in my office. Can you please call my secretary? When will you be available? Come down to the office. I say, how do you know about us? He says, so Chabad got in touch with me. Sydney, you were just in Sydney. We start to talk. He pulls out a picture of what he looked like in the 1930s. A younger kin, mit payas, mit chassidische bekesha. I look at him. He says, yes, I come from a Hasidic family. I ran away, was a teenager, came to Australia with miracles, joined the Navy. After the war, I knew the tourist trade, I knew the value of cairns. I worked my way up until I bought the hotel. I totally forgot about my Yiddishkeit. Chabad discovered me. You should know that this man drove us to the airport for our plane. He said, I want the mitzvah. I couldn't believe my ears. Then I checked with Chabad. They take Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. They make a whole davening in the hotel. They kosher out part of the kitchen. I couldn't believe my ears. This is Australia. Chabad. I was invited by the Mizrahi. I had a Neis Galui. Why? My first night there, Shmuel, I give a talk, tremendous crowd. I didn't realize, Mizrahi and Chabad, it's not like America, not like Israel. They're mamish interlocked. And I had prepared a tremendous Hasidic Shavuot that I heard from the Rav. And I gave that talk that night, not knowing. The audience went crazy with joy. Turned out afterwards that the head Chabad guy, his wife, was my student. Afterwards, covered Malachim. This is Australia. Now, this is very fascinating because the Aussies have a problem that none of us have. And it proves a certain point that when it comes to Halacha L'maisa, the pressures of life are very great. You can't exclude it. And this is what I lectured on. Remember my lectures on the Kuntas HaShach, on Psak HaLakri, of the Reish Membet. Those are my finest lectures. I showed you Al Pi Halacha, what you call Adas Yochid, Hefzid Meruba, Kovid Archim, Kibud Shabbat V'Oneg, Shabbat V'Yom Tov, Kibud V'Oneg, Simchat Chag. It plays a role in Halacha. We're not Reformed Jews, God forbid. But if you have a Machlokes HaPoskim, at times we have to be Mekil because of the reality of the situation. This is why so many Poskim will tell you, we quoted Rav Henkin, we quoted others, so many Poskim will tell you, it's very important when you get a difficult shayla to know the people, know the background, know where they're living. And this affects everything. Every question you're ever going to get of substance. You understand? We just spoke about the Rav, the Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Tanya, and the Boston Rebbetzin. And you see the influence of life. I want to hear my husband speak. I don't have time after Shabbos. The Boston Rebbetzin, I'll tell you very simply. your nerves. I know what it's like when you have guests on Shabbos. All right, well, I go to my daughter all the time. My daughter uses paper plates. I understand it 100%. She has a heavy, this Shabbos, all the children were there. I was walking Shabbos morning to my daughter, so I meet my neighbor. My neighbor says, "Why are you so happy?" I said, "Why am I so happy? I'm going to Seder Shabbat with my children, my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren. I'm the happiest person alive." Ani modela kadosh baruch hu. Ashrein l'shezachinu. Plain and simple. Okay? There's impact. Now, I'll give you the source in a minute, but why am I saying all of this? For one simple reason. Here I'm describing Australia, and every word I told you is true, and I'll compliment what I said in the Monday class. And there's no question that Chabad played the biggest major role in the Yiddishkeit we have in Melbourne, which today has, it's a near the aim be Yisrael, in the full sense of the word. And Sydney, not as big as Melbourne, but also. And they have a tremendous problem, because the Lubavitcher Rebbe was against building an Eruv. And yet, you'll go to Melbourne, you'll go to Sydney, and there it is. A Reuven, and a Reuven even built by people who are world famous Chabad Hasidim. Very fascinating. But this comes back to what Rakef had said 2 years ago, a year ago, a day ago, and a minute ago. The minute Reb Moshe was matir in Erev in Spring Valley, this is the 1960s. The minute Reb Moshe was matir in Erev in Kew Gardens Hills, the minute Reb Moshe was matir in Erev in Detroit, you're not going to have an Orthodox community in the world that will not have an Erev, because the people are yelling and shouting and demanding it. Once you get used to life with an Erev, how do you go to Chutz Laretz and live without an Erev? And this pattern repeated itself, you name it. London, Brooklyn, Manhattan, Washington Heights, Melbourne, Sydney, all over the world, South Africa, wherever, whatever you mention to them. The West Hamptons, the court finally ruled clearly, they have the Erev up, they went to court again, and the Jews challenged that there's a wire and that it's an infringement upon separation of church and state. And thank God, the judge threw it out and ruled in favor that the separation of church and state doesn't mean that we can't accommodate people to observe their religion. What does this have to do with church and state? Church is not saying, the state is not saying that wire has anything to do with the statutes and the laws and the money of the state. All the state is saying, we give permission to Torah Jews to build an Erev in accordance with that their religion. It's unbelievable. Jews, our own self-hating Jews. Did you remember today, the rabbi, I couldn't believe my ears. He attacks Netanyahu. But I'll tell you, it'll help Netanyahu in the election, because the country is more right-wing than ever due to the birth and also the emigration here, the Aliyah here. So Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Melchior said, no reason to come in Aliyah just because they're killing Jews wholesale in Europe. Once again, premises, but very well. They're killing Jews in Europe once again. Gentlemen, I want to quote to you a pamphlet that appeared.
So how did they look at that contradiction?
The
Rebbe said no.
Yitzchak.
And his word is gold.
Patience is a virtue, and sablonitis is an illness. Do not suffer from sablonitis. We will get there. Gentlemen,
the rabbi in Ukraine, the same thing. Like,
Yeah, no, no, Rabbi in Ukraine, you have Chabadia and you have Colin Stone there. Gentlemen, we need a minion from Marv, so...
I recruited.
You recruited, okay, a quarter to, we'll more or less stop. Okay, let me get started. This topic will carry over to next week. I'm going to show you, I blow your mind with information. Can I inherit it with you? When you learn Torah, you dig and you come up, and what you don't come up with, your Talmidim send you sources. Rebbe, you might be interested in this. But this I have, this I know I was in, I was there, I saw with my own eyes. I'll tell you, I have a lot of nachat in out of the Melbourne area, because Melbourne has Bezeron printed, has Lakewood there. By the way, the Lakewood Beis Medrash was built by a Chabad Chassid, by Yesel Gudnik. So I asked Yesela, he's married to my student Sterner. So I asked Yesela, Sterner knew. So I asked Yesela, how do you give money to Lakewood after all the fighting that we've spoken about, at least in the Monday class, anti-Chabad feeling? So he said, yes, the Rebbe, and the Rebbe told him, Adrabba, give to Lakewood. It shows you. So you have the Lakewood crowd there, the Chabad crowd, the Mizrahi crowd. Everyone holds by the Eruv. Why? That's the greatness. The original Eruv they built, they fought over, wasn't good enough. They brought my chaver, my colleague, Shimi Ida, Rabbi Shimon Ida, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, they brought him to Melbourne. And he went through the Eruv and made improvements and showed them, and he gave the Hechsher to the Eruv. It is one of the smartest things they did. The person from the Mizrahi, the head of the Mizrahi doctor, his name happens to be Dr. Lamb, Dr. Danny Lamb. I believe his first name is Danny, if I'm not mistaken, if I recall correctly. No relation to Normie Lamb, to Rabbi Dr. President Norman Lamb, but the same name. And he said to me, we brought Rabbi Ida down, because once we brought Rabbi Ida, everyone from the Lakewood crowd to the Mizrahi crowd had to accept it. He was acceptable to everybody. And that was very, very smart. So they brought him down. And this book is called An Eruv in Melbourne, A Halachic Analysis. It's by Rabbi Mordechai Tzvi. Let me see if I'm pronouncing it right. Krasnjansky. It has to be by a Chabadnik. Krasnjansky. It seems that that's the, you can correct me if I'm wrong, it looks to me like the Polish spelling of the name. And Chabadnikim perpetuate the old names. If you ever come in touch with Chabadnikim with funny spelling names, they don't Americanize it. They want to perpetuate the Alta Hain, the old country. It was published in 1988, and it's a beautiful halachic analysis of the Eruv and all the questions we've raised. Everything is in English. The whole problem of Tet Zayin Amot, the problem of 600,000, the problem of highways, that curve, you see diagrams here, a straight mafulash, one that curves. The whole Yerushalayim that we spoke about over a year ago in about Yerushalayim, was it a Rishut HaRabim, you're right, there wasn't a Rishut HaRabim, the question of water when it surrounds a community, the status of bridges. He quotes the Chatam Sofer, he deals with the Karpif, a planted field within a city, and so on and so forth. On page 33, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, Shlita, in his reply to the question of the Eruv in Melbourne, advanced another chshash. The Rebbe stated that it is inevitable that at some time the Eruv will break and people accustomed to carrying will not cease to do so at this time. And he quotes Reb Moshe Feinstein, and we've spoken about this, we'll come back to it, and I'll end off with this now, that Reb Moshe refers to the fact that in New York City on the East Side, 110, 115 years ago, there was Rav Siegel, I believe his first name was Rav Yehoshua Siegel, was one of the big Rabbanim. They made an Erev, and part of the Erev depended upon the elevated Third Avenue L. You don't know about that train. I used to use that train regularly to go down to the East Side. I could catch it two little blocks from my house, up in the air, elevated. Knocked down, totally gone today. The Erev was based upon that elevated train as being at Surat HaPetach on that side of the East Side. Number of years later, the train was knocked down, and yet the elevated L was knocked down, and people continued to carry on Shabbat. And that's the problem Rav Moshe raises, and it's exactly the problem that the Rebbe raises. So, what did we do today? Fascinating shiur. Poor Rabbi Mendel. I have a double page copy. How many pages? I'm not finished with it. One second. No page here. Just the document. 39 pages. 39, but I have, I'll show you another source too, 39 pages, excellent, I tell you, in Melbourne, I don't know who he is exactly, but he may very well have been a member of the Melbourne Chabad Kollel, which was on a very high level. I was very impressed. The Rosh Kollel was a gonadir from London, Chabadnik, Bucky, and Achronim, backwards and forwards. Very high level. Kollel supported by Yesser Lagutnik. I don't know today what the situation is. I was there in 2000, so I don't know where everything stands today. Yesser Lagutnik is not on the level of wealth that he was in 2000 when he was very wealthy. Then he had some setbacks, so I don't know if that Kollel is still there, but he single-handedly supported it and picked up Chabadnikim from Kollelim all over the Chabad world. So we saw with Rabbi Mendel, when all is said and done, the price he has paid for being lenient and coming out against Rav Moshe with sources, and his wife describing the elderly people, breaks the heart, who don't go to shul on Shabbat because they can't carry whatever they have to carry, their medicines, right? Their medicines, their canes, their tissues, their eyeglasses, whatever they have to carry, and they can't carry on Shabbat. But give him credit, a fascinating sefer. Then we went on to Rav Asher Weiss and Ramot, the blockades, and from Rav Asher Weiss we started the whole question of the Lubavitcher Rebbe's viewpoint, to be continued. I cannot tell you how important tomorrow's shiur is. I mentioned the Malachim last week. The whole world got involved in Malachim. I hit upon something very fascinating, and I'll backtrack and give you a little bit more material tomorrow as we roll in to the seventh Lubavitcher Rebbe.
You mentioned Chabad, but do you mention the Mashiach guy?
We will get there. Patience. That's Monday. We're going to get there.
Monday.
Michael, please enjoy. Pass it on. It's a collection of articles by Harold Bodley on one topic.
Thank you.
How baseball resembles or reflects America. It's very, very fascinating. Easy reading. Believe me, easy reading. I started in place of that now, Letters to Talia. And boy, I need 20 handkerchiefs. I cry so much.
Thank you.
if you know what I'm referring to, Michtavim Letalia. Shayur, this is passed back, please. Now, I have two copies here. If anyone wants the best description of the Machloket in Hebron, because someone in America asked me, and I said, look, the Haredi papers don't write about it. You know, it's censored. The regular press writes with hatred. This appeared in the Chadali Shabbos little magazine, Haredim Datim Lumiyim. It's a very fair description and analysis of the Machloket. Until we meet again, anyone who wants it, you're welcome to. Until we get on health and happiness, that's for Danya. Sidurim are right here. Sam, please give me one and pass them out. Thank you very, very much for coming. It was a full house today. Do we have a chiyuv here? Anyone a chiyuv?
You dedicated this year to Alice. I just wanted to say.